Welcome back this hour to a very special man who, along with his wife Maya Schoen, presents Taking Aim Radio, talking, of course, about Ralph Schoenemann, who has been on the program for many, many years. He's a remarkable scholar, an extraordinary researcher, and a man who presents history that, for me at least, many years ago, made it come alive with the potential that it wasn't what we were being told, and it continues to this day to be a joke. And I can't wait to hear what Ralph Schoenemann has to say about Bush's outrage. How many? And the issue of Al-Qaeda behind every rock in Iraq, and how Afghanistan, of course, is not even worth mentioning in the media anymore, even though we continue to kill Afghan civilians by the score, and how Iran, of course, is manipulating everything evil in Iraq, a country we have absolutely destroyed and decimated. Welcome back, Ralph Schoenemann.
Thank you, Jeff. Good to be with you again.
Happy 4th of July.
Yes. I mean, what shall we call it? Imperial Day?
I guess. We've got to come up with something better. I've urged people to tomorrow try to set aside a little time if you have a family. Even if you're alone, it doesn't matter. And get a copy of the Constitution and just read it. Read the Bill of Rights. We don't do that enough in this country. I mean, you know, go out and eat and have fun and all that, but think about what the founding fathers of America really achieved and what has been taken over by nothing less than a gangster syndicate, which is despicable.
Well, yes, Jeff, and in particular because the timing just recently of these staged events around the 4th of July, of course, and the advent of Brown as the replacement prime minister in Great Britain. I would like to remind our listeners of the testimony that Zbigniew Brzezinski gave to the Senate Foreign Relations Committee about 6 weeks ago. And it's very important, in my judgment, to look at what this represents, because in an extraordinary way, Brzezinski was breaking ranks. Now, if we bear in mind that Zbigniew Brzezinski is the architect, as the National Security Advisor to Carter, of the designs on breaking up the various republics of the former Soviet Union and on the military preemptive attacks on Central Asia and the Middle East, outlined in the Grand Chessboard, there are two people actually, Jeff, who were authoring the phrase that we need a catalytic and mobilizing event, a catastrophic event like Pearl Harbor. The first was Brzezinski. The second was in the Project for the New American Century was Dov Zakheim, Rabbi Zakheim, who was the controller for the Pentagon presiding over the $7.2 trillion that had been, quote, lost, unquote. It's also worth mentioning that Dov Zakheim's company, Systemics, was its technology and its expertise
was
in the creation of computer controlled air, remote controlled aircraft.
Funniest thing.
757.
Those doggone coincidences just keep popping up all over the place.
Well, bearing in mind that this is the background of Brzezinski, it's all the more significant, I think, that when he appears before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, he's expressing the view of a sector of the U.S. ruling class when he says there are three words that represent a big lie in our time. And they are war on terror, he says to the Senate Foreign Relations Committee.
Yeah.
He goes on to say that the drumbeat for an attack on Iran, which has been orchestrated and coordinated and all the groundwork laid for that, he says, will be a catastrophic undertaking. And he says that in this testimony, he says, moreover, it is very clear that in order to obtain a license to attack Iran, that the authorities, the Bush administration, is preparing for what he called an attack within the borders of the United States that would be blamed on Iran. This is Brzezinski.
Now, this, of course, did not make headlines. It did not make any newscast I'm aware of. It was an extraordinary statement by Brzezinski, which deserved wide dispersion, and it didn't get it.
No, and you see that Kissinger's testimony, many others, but the were highlighted. But Brzezinski went further. He outed a memorandum in full detail of Bush and Blair just prior to the declaration of war, the attack on Iraq. A memorandum representing a secret meeting between Blair and Bush when they were acknowledging that they had no real credible basis for selling their planned long-standing attack, planned attack on Iraq. And so Brzezinski quotes them as saying, "We're going to have to arrange a spectacular event."
Uh-huh.
Now,
yep.
Brzezinski is really breaking ranks here, and it's not because he's seen the light. It's rather that a sector of the class considers that the present moment for an attack on Iran represents a reckless endangerment. It will engender a generalized uprising throughout the Middle East and with consequences in the United States that are not far removed from that.
Yeah.
But, I think, Jeff, that the... But we have to keep that in mind because what Brzezinski was warning about and stating explicitly they plan a spectacular attack has been borne out by what we've seen just recently.
Well, are you talking about Presidential Directive 51?
Well, I was in talking about the staged operations in Glasgow and JFK event and the circumstances surrounding what was going on in Gaza, but also a document that ABC News called the secret document, U.S. Fears Terror Spectacular Planned. This is July 1st,
mm-hmm.
An ABC News dispatch by Brian Ross and Rhonda Schwartz and Richard Esposito.
Mm-hmm.
A secret U.S. law enforcement report prepared for the Department of Homeland Security warns that al-Qaeda is planning a terror spectacular this summer. According to senior officials with access to the documents, reminiscent of the warnings and intelligence we were getting in the summer of 2001,
yep.
So on and so forth. And the U.S. officials have kept the information secret, the report, the article tells us, and that Homeland Security Secretary Michael Chertoff said on ABC News with this week with George Stephanopoulos that the United States had to consider the prospect of an attack focused on the U.S., and ABC News reported that U.S. law enforcement received intelligence reports warning of terror 2 weeks ago, warning of terror attacks in Glasgow against airport infrastructure
mm-hmm.
and aircraft. So,
mm-hmm.
by the way, when the Guardian reported on the events in Glasgow, its headline was very instructive, too. Police hunted the suspects before the airport attack.
Yeah.
They had advanced knowledge. They were all set up for it. You know, these things have the same fingerprint everywhere. Now, Associated Press, Jeff, on this business in Glasgow, says that the British intelligence knows that it's an Iranian military unit. And that the Iranian military unit, furthermore, had full advanced plans and knowledge of the pending Glasgow attacks. Of course, there's not a scintilla of evidence for any of this, but that doesn't, you know, that you can see the game plan here.
It's, of course.
And interestingly, too, is another aspect of what the Glasgow events are preparing. Bomb threat brings Cobra to the table. What's Cobra? COBRA is the government's emergency response committee. It brings mm-hmm. together ministers, officials, and experts, it is a kind of emergency meeting that prepares for what amounts to virtual martial law. And it was last convened when they were preparing for the H5N1 strain of bird flu, and they've convened it now in relation to these events in Glasgow. So I think we can't fail to connect the dots here. We're being set up, as we always are.
And they're telegraphing it to us once again.
The other little example of that was the New York airport bomb plot, if you recall.
Oh, ludicrous. I mean, somebody wrote this up as these Laurel and Hardy-esque we shouldn't even use those wonderful comedians' names in this, but just absurdly ridiculous scenarios we're seeing. Yeah.
The other thing that I think is important to remind the listeners with respect to the JFK plot is that the main person who was involved in preparing it was an FBI informer.
Yeah.
Ali Salem Redux. So,
1991, yeah. World Trade Center first bombing.
Right. So what I think is, you cannot look at these things, even in their immediate play in the press, without immediately, having all of the elements that denote the well-established false flag operations. I mean, the original London bombing, as you know, the Israelis were warning MI6, yep. And MI6 was warning the Israelis, and here we have coincidence theory at work here, because you have Giuliani and Netanyahu.
All in London at the same time.
All in London at the hotel.
7/7 bombings, and the only bus of the day diverted down in front of the Tavistock Institute, where its top was blown off. Come on, gang.
Yes.
This is the Reichstag scenario over and over and over again.
And the headlines no longer conceal it. The headline in The Guardian, the police hunted the suspects before
the bombing. Yeah, I agree.
They're not even attempting to give it a kind of fig leaf.
Indeed. Stand by, Ralph. We'll be right back. Okay, right back with Ralph Schoenman, takingaimradio.com. Okay, Ralph.
Yes, Jeff, in tomorrow's newspaper, Guardian, mastermind based abroad, guiding the plot. Well, the mastermind who's guiding the plot is, guess what? He's an Iraqi official who was part of the resistance in Iraq, and now he's moved his fight to London. counterterrorism officials say the data from the phones and email traffic were checked on the database used by MI5, MI6, and GCHQ, the government's eavesdropping center. So it's the Iraqi Al Qaeda plus Iran. That's involved here. So, bear in mind that all of these things are part of a relentless drumbeat of staged events and publicity and of conditioning the population for the plans to attack Iran.
And key to this whole thing about ultimately bringing martial law to the good ladies and gentlemen of America and all of their children is Presidential Directive 51, another key paragraph in the telegraph of things to come. They're getting ready. They're letting us know that this is what's going to happen in case of a national emergency, which can occur, if you read it and you've heard us before talk about it, at the local level, whatever that means. So it's wide open.
Well, that's 51 is part of the garden plot in Northern Command and the generalized preparations for the quarantining of people and the sequestering large sectors of the population and putting them in camps.
They're going to use H5N1 and maybe XDR-TB, a South African strain, to do it as well. And all we need is a few cases here, and they can slam down the lid on civil liberties.
Right. That's right. But bear something in mind, too, here. If you remember Maya and I had been a month in Palestine and in May. I was in South Asia after that. I mentioned that because you couldn't mistake what was being prepared there with respect to the events in Gaza, for example. First of all, in Gaza, The Palestine Authority and its security chief, Mohammed Dahlan, was openly and directly run by the Central Intelligence Agency. And as such, he'd been set up with huge amounts of arms from the Egyptians and the Israelis and the United States. And these were being directed against any of the population that was in any way resistant to the policing operation of the Palestine Authority itself on behalf of the Israelis. And bear in mind that if you can imagine the degree of degeneration of what is called the Palestine Authority, the operations that were unfolding in Gaza, as they were well described by Naomi Klein in, of all places, The Nation, Gaza, not just a prison, but a laboratory. What we're talking about here is a series of poison gas attacks across Gaza. Medical sources, there's a full 40-page report on this by international doctors, also by the Italian television and various investigators. The Al-Nasser Hospital in Khan Yunis documented the symptoms of the virulent gas, the severe excretion of fluids, convulsions, chest pains, fatigue, blotches on the skin, and the gas bombs, which have been fired throughout Khan Yunis and in various parts of Gaza, have been unleashed on the population over a sustained period of time. And all of the Al-Shifa Hospital, all of the medical documentation about this, the most unusual internal burns not the result of
normal ammunition,
but of a specific type of toxic gas.
Sure.
And the gas is part, as well as the Independent in London described, the application of another type of weapon called dense inert metal explosives, or DIME, an experimental type of explosive that's been used throughout Gaza. So the response of the population to this unbridled assault has been to want to strike back at those who have administered it. Mass convulsions in the Gaza Strip, the report goes on, chemical weapons application, biological weapons application. The symptoms involve convulsions and spasms and burning throughout the body, vomiting upon eating, weakness, cramps, insomnia, fever, shaking, and worse, and so on. The Italian television probe that Israel has used, the new weapon prototype throughout the Gaza Strip, it delineates the carcinogenics that have been deployed. But what's interesting is that as the population responds in Gaza, so Netanyahu departs for the United States in a bid to increase, quote, pressure on Iran, and the Prime Minister of Israel, Ehud Olmert, joins him. Interestingly enough, it was Olmert who, when he was mayor of Tel Aviv, was the person who facilitated, you remember, the urban moving van people who were brought right back out of there, having prepared for the...
extricated, as it were.
Yes, Olmert was the point man.
Yeah,
here.
I got it.
And while the Israelis are telling us in the U.S. that now we have Hamastan on the northern border of Israel and Hezbollahstan on the southern border of Israel. So what goes on? Why, the Jerusalem Post and Reuters tells us that there are joint training exercises between the Israeli Air Force and the United States Air Force across the Negev Desert. A multi-year plan, joint flights and targeting the Iranian locations for which they are in rehearsal.
Yeah, supposedly. Stand by, Ralph. Hold on. We have to do a little business. We'll come right back. Hold that thought, and we'll rejoin our listeners in just a couple of minutes. back with the brilliant Ralph Schoenemann, talking about all kinds of important and crucial things that you'll find basically nowhere else. We're talking about Gaza now, and talking about the poison gas used there. These poor people continue to be butchered by our great democratic friend and ally in the Middle East, the only democracy in the Middle East, the wonderful Zionist state of Israel, that blankety little country, as the French ambassador let slip one day a couple of years ago.
You know, interestingly, a report in the Israeli press, Noah Schachtman, on June 4th, we've talked about the dime and the poison gas. They have across Gaza what are called auto-kill zones. It's automated kill zones, networking, remote-controlled machine guns, ground sensors, and drones. Defense News, Barbara Paul Rome, reported that these are deployed throughout Gaza. They entail 0.5 caliber automated machine guns in pillboxes that are connected via fiber optics to a remote operator station and a command and control center. Each machine gun mounted station serves as a type of robotic sniper. And it covers an area of 1,500 meters. So we'll think about this is something that is also called the Samson Remote Control Weapons Stations. It's described by Jane's Defense Weekly as mm-hmm. well. Mm-hmm. And what I'm getting at here is you want to go get a loaf of bread, you want to send your kids play with some friends. You don't know when you're going to be triggering these automated kill zones with remote-controlled high-caliber machine guns. About a terror state and terrorizing a population.
Oh, it's hideous. Absolutely the world's number one terrorist state, without question, is Israel. Put these poor people in these walled concentration camps now. It is beyond human and humane. It is subhuman behavior, and it is ignored absolutely by the Western monopoly media, which is owned and operated by, of course, a handful of corporations.
Right. And, you know, in regard to this, the provocations in Gaza were all geared to prepare for Netanyahu and Olmert coming to the United States to deploy the situation with respect to Hamas in Gaza and Hezbollah as the further rationale for preparing an attack on Iran. As you and many important researchers and analysts have been documenting over the past years, William Arkin in the Washington Post, this is a part of something called Theater Iran Near Term, Tehran, which since May 2003 right. has been envisaging precisely what we see unfolding now. It's a combination of covert operations, psyops, and a massive military attack that's on the drawing board and is from all of these false flag hysteria operations that we're being treated to now, it indicates that they have it and they want to try to pull this off this summer or this fall. I think that's whether they do or not is in no small part a function of within the ruling class. Mm-hmm. Sectors of military intelligence are mm-hmm. very alarmed about this prospect because they see that there's a generalized resistance in Iraq. These Looney Tunes want to use tactical nuclear weapons on the Iranian population. It's a country of 70 million people. The whole map of the Middle East will change in the aftermath of this, and not in the way the imperialists have in mind either. So there are members amongst the rulers who think that the timing is off. These are tactical concerns they have. But we should bear in mind that, as you were mentioned, it's a gangster clique, and it's a pretty desperate clique as well. And they're capable of launching an attack on not just Iran, but on all of us through these staged events. I think we have to anticipate that's mm-hmm. That's the scenario that they are.
Just a quick word about Al-Qaeda. And how the Al-Qaeda connection is now popping up everywhere in the Western media, especially the U.S. media, the controlled lapdog, lick-spittle, oil-soaked monopoly press media. That's what we're talking about here. And they will, of course, use it to their ends, whatever they may decide to do. But Al-Qaeda, if you have ever seen any story about how the resistance or even the average Iraqi was asked about Al-Qaeda in Iraq, the response basically was laughter. Al-Qaeda is a joke over there. Al-Qaeda is a fringe group, one of many, and certainly does not form anything close to the majority or the backbone or the fighting spirit of the resistance in Iraq. It has nothing to do with that.
Very little connection to it whatsoever. Al-Qaeda, in fact, was barely known such to the ISI in Pakistan. It was a small little handful of people. It is true. I was recently informed that the actual amounts of money that went through the hands of Gulbuddin Hekmatyar and Osama bin Laden and their group on behalf of CIA were no less than $65 billion. I'd always been reporting it as something in the order of $6 billion. No, it's a multiple of 10 of that.
Wow.
But
wow.
That doesn't mean that something, I mean, that was part of the apparatus of that was basically run by the ISI and by CIA. But Al-Qaeda itself, barely known. It's a handful of people. It's not involved in anything of any scale. It doesn't have the capacity to do that. And that's confirmed by all of the people in the Pakistani intelligence and military who had been running these operations. So it's the scarecrow that we always have presented to us to conjure up a demonic other for the unfolding of attacks that the U.S. and its rulers have had on the drawing boards and needed their pretext to be able to implement. Mm-hmm. That's the basic operation.
Yeah. Meanwhile, back home, not only did Bush, of course, through PD-51, instruct America that he would be assuming the reins of dictator in times of a national emergency, that the entire federal government would come under his immediate and total control. But the vice president didn't waste much time or let any grass grow under his feet in determining that his office wasn't anything at all to do with the executive branch of the United States government or the Constitution. Never mind, he remains president of the Senate, but he's not under the executive branch. Now, the phony, traitorous, treasonous Congress here, especially the Democrat Congress, had a chance to cut off funding to the vice creep, Cheney, and didn't.
No, I mean, look, you remember that when Lieberman, the senator from Tel Aviv, was running as a supposed independent in Connecticut, Barack Obama stumped her throughout Connecticut in support of Lieberman.
Thank you. Let's hold that thought. We got more to talk about Senator Joe Lieberman of Tel Aviv when we come back with Ralph Shulman. Okay, back with Ralph Shulman, a conversation with one of America's truly skilled and inspiring researchers. He's an amazing man, along with Maya, and they produce their own program, of course, Taking Aim Radio, and it is well worth your time. Exclusive material there all the time. The Terror State and 9/11 was a special presentation just recently aired. That was a good one. You put that together on June 23rd,
well,
I guess.
That was a presentation that I gave in New York at the Ethical Culture Society, Jeff, which is part of a WBAI fundraiser, and then with a follow-up meeting the next day at St. Mark's Church on 2nd Avenue and 10th Street, the church of where Frank Morales is the pastor, and Frank has done this extraordinary work, as you know, on Operation the Northern Command and Garden Plot and so on. And both Frank and Les Jamison are key figures in New York 9/11 Truth, and very much involved with the preparation of a commission of investigation of the events of September 11th.
Right. If you'll notice on Ralph's page, Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen at the top left, The Hidden History of Zionism. I hope all of you will read that very carefully. That is basically one of the keys to understanding what's going on, and it's laid out brilliantly.
Thank you, Jeff. I mean, in that regard, by the way, there was an interesting report by IFP out of Canada, U.S. Israel finalized Iran's strike plan.
Yeah, I saw it. Right. Deb Kefile ran it first, I think, but whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, we're really, the Zionist state is the attack dog of U.S. rulers, and particularly in the Middle East, but certainly not only in the Middle East. They've been deployed in Africa and Central America and Latin America, and of course within the United States itself.
Right.
But the basic issue here is that the system itself, the capitalist economic and political structure, is in a state of terminal decay and crisis. It's addicted to war. It's dependent upon massive arms production. You basically have a gangster cabal in the intelligence agencies and the Pentagon and the banks and corporations who have captured this state and use it as their vehicle. And they're waging war against the peoples of the world, not least the people of the United States.
And when we get our sadly, when the innocent civilians of America get their comeuppance, either by our own hand, and by that I mean the so-called government of Washington and its black tentacles, or by some foreign power, it'll be largely and probably lamentedly, if that's a word, cheered by many around the world who have grown to hate the United States and everything it stands for, which, of course, is by design. This is not happening accidentally. And what we have now is not a lame duck presidency, but a dead duck presidency. And when you talk about desperation, Ralph, you're right on the money, of course. These people now with the Libby, they didn't even wait with the Libby commutation. They're pushing it right in our faces, and they will do anything they want to do. They have literally flaunted the Constitution, trampled upon it, laughed at it, mocked it, and basically told the Congress and the Senate to shove it. They're going to do anything they want. That's how out of control it is here, at least in a superficial way of viewing things.
Well, a couple of points about this. I mean, with respect to Libby, I mean, Libby basically was going to blow the whistle on some of these guys. You put me in jail, and I'll take you with me.
And I wouldn't want to. I hope Libby has lots of life insurance for his close friends to benefit by, because that guy is talk about what happened to Ken Lay, the convenient heart attack.
Well, you know, what we also have to keep in mind here, Jeff, is that the indictment of Libby is supposedly because he outed the identity of Valerie Plame, the covert operations wife of the
which resulted in the
Joe Wilson,
which resulted in the deaths of how many people we don't even know.
Yes, but I think it's important. I think Maya and I have tried to emphasize this because you had a lot of liberal hand-wringing over the injustice done to Valerie Plame and so on, but I think it's important to understand that the outing of these killer special force covert operations CIA types is an absolute responsibility for all of us. I mean, how are we going to describe who killed Kennedy and Martin Luther King and Malcolm X without exposing the gentlemen killers of the CIA. And the irony of it all is that the original law that was put into play that makes it a crime to expose the identity of covert operatives, it was known as the Lew Wolf Act, because if you remember Covert Action Information Bulletin, which was published by Lew Wolf and Philip A.G. In Washington, was listing and exposing all of these killers, CIA killer and death squad operatives in different countries, and that's an absolute responsibility for all of us. I mean, what does free speech mean if you can't expose the crimes of those who are using power illicitly in our name and carrying out atrocities with impunity? Of course it's important to expose and to identify this. And if you accept the premise that it's a crime to do that, we can't talk about who was responsible for 9/11. We can't talk about who's really behind the death of somebody who suddenly a critic is found with a heart attack, when we know that this is a targeted assassination. But to expose those who are responsible, if you follow the logic of this. So the point here is that of course, the Cheney and Libby operations, the least of it is that they outed Valerie Plame. That has a very interesting backdrop. Seymour Hersh in The New Yorker had published one of his many articles that is based upon information that he gets from the CIA, but he has sources within the agency and has over years. But in one of the columns called The Stovepipe, he documented how, with respect to the famous yellow cake, uranium yellow cake in Niger, this was something that, in fact, the CIA set up Cheney and Bush over. Ironically enough, the gentlemen killers of the CIA considered that Bush and Cheney were recklessly endangering imperial interests by their adventurism in Iraq. And consequently, the father of Valerie Plame, who is a high-ranking, long-standing CIA officer, actually arranged that Wilson would go out to Niger. He wasn't sent by the White House. He that whole Niger yellow cake was a sting operation. They figured that Bush and Cheney were dumb enough to buy it as a pretext, and then it would be blown up in their faces. So there's an internecine conflict going on within the ranks of the rulers. They're all killers, as it were, over tactics and strategy and what have you. And the outing of Valerie Plame, is, you know, not just some fact-gathering academic for the CIA. She's a hands-on covert operative who had responsibilities for eliminating people in North Africa. And Joe Wilson, Wilson himself, if you remember how Saddam Hussein was set up during the first Gulf War, when Brzezinski and the United States induced Saddam Hussein to attack Iran after the Iranian Revolution and to amputate the oil-producing provinces of Iran, namely the province of Khuzestan. And after that was done and the war became a protracted war with the U.S. and the Israelis and the Emirates funding both sides and arming both sides, as Kissinger put it, to bleed them both white. Yeah. When this process with over a million casualties was unfolding, the Emir of Kuwait was moving his arbitrary borders 900 square kilometers north till he was sitting on top of the largest oil reserve, the Ramallah oil fields in Iraq. Then he bought this drilling equipment horizontal to extract the Iraqi oil over the border, and Saddam.
Right, they were slant. They were slant drilling, is what they were doing.
Slant drilling equipment, exactly. And Saddam Hussein said to OPEC and to King Khalid of Saudi Arabia, "Here we've expended our blood and treasure to stabilize the Emirates against Shia radicalism, and this is how you reward us." That's the context in which not April Glasby, the nominal ambassador, but Joseph Wilson, Bush's point man, went to see Tariq Aziz and Saddam and said, "You, they did you wrong. Look, we've got the fleet in the Gulf. You rectify the border with Kuwait." go get your territory back, basically, is what they did. They set him up. That was Joe Wilson. This Joe Wilson and Valerie Plame couple are a nasty piece of work. And the point here is that Libby and Cheney in outing them as the wife is part of their tactical skirmishes over their competing strategies for how to best impose the Imperium. We can't buy into that. What we should be saying is that they're all criminals and they're all gangsters. They should all be exposed for their crimes against humanity, and they should be overthrown, every last one of them, swept into the dustpan of history where they belong.
I agree, yeah.
I think that's our task, but not to pick and choose amongst them. And Libby, the Libby part of the neocons, Jeff, as you know so well, I mean, he's part of JINSA, the Jewish Institute for National Security Affairs, and the American Enterprise Institute, that whole neocon cabal that's linked to this wing of capital that has set its foot on the path of this permanent war and preemptive war.
Mm-hmm. Guess who, we got to go to the break here, but guess who Scooter Libby acted as attorney for from 1985 to the year 2000? None other than Mark Rich. Remember Clinton's Pardongate, folks? Mark Rich, pardoned by Clinton on one of his last days in office. Scooter Libby was Rich's attorney for 15 years. Oh, what a tangled web. We'll be right back with Ralph Schoenemann after this.